So as a spontaneous fundraiser for UUCP, I'm taking bets on the next timing of the... We got 5-minute increments, we'll start the bidding. Many of you received UUCPA's weekly update in your email boxes. If you don't, you can sign up online. And some of you will have seen that yesterday there, I shared a little info on the series of reflections that commence today, which I'm calling Soul Focus. But since not everyone saw that, before we dive in, I'll repeat a few key points and add a couple quick other ones. As it will take some time to develop and show some ideas about how the soul affect our cultural conditions, I liken this to a TV series you might enjoy. The narrative may have many facets, and though smaller partial closures happen along the way, along with new openings and expansions, few, if any, main storylines are wrapped up in a given week. But gradually, things come together, and piece by piece, soul focus will do likewise. So while questions may arise, most of them will be answered as we go. That said, in no way do these reflections presume to resolve every complexity and difficulty concerning human suffering, inequity, or iniquity. Nevertheless, as you'll hear pretty much from the start, they emphatically take up aspects of these in uncommon ways, and to my mind, offer some potent remedies to widespread individual and collective ailments. While at times part of these may seem somewhat theoretical, please recall that, as someone once wisely observed, there's nothing more practical than a good theory. My aim is to play a part in reclaiming the soul's reality and significance for modern people and show how this helps foster personal and communal health. Yet particularly at the start, aspects of what I propose may sound foreign to some contemporary ears. Hence I ask you here, as I did in the update, to listen with what Buddhism calls beginner's mind, an attitude of receptiveness toward the unfamiliar mixed with a bit of patience. In terms of following the story, other service topics will occasionally preempt the series. For instance, Reverend Katz's February 1st installation service. Please plan now to attend that, February 1st. And also some pledge drive services and guest speakers in March. But as I proceed, I'll recap some key points as needed. And like every other UUCPA talk, they'll all be available as audio recordings on the website. So anyone who cares to can always catch any missed installments or listen again before the next new one. And a couple last thoughts on presentation. As I compose these, I document all my sources, but sharing them verbally is way too cumbersome. So while I'll cite authors that I draw from, I'll seldom cite specific sources. Also, at times, I've abridged their words, but normally won't specify that either. Nor will I say quote often, quote this, quote that, because it would be too many quotes. But I'll mostly indicate these through verbal inflections. And I've adjusted some quoted works to reflect gender-inclusive language. Lastly, I'll mention that Ralph Waldo Emerson began his public life as a Unitarian minister before becoming the leading light of the 19th century Transcendentalist movement in this country. Like many UUs today, including me, Emerson has a great regard for the glories of nature and for the accomplishments of the human mind. But he also posits, as do I, that these yet overlook something vital to human life, hence the term transcendentalist. And while I'm taking this line from his 1838 Harvard Divinity School address out of context, I believe it's fair to say that for Emerson, the heart of any genuine religious / spiritual quest is, quote, first, soul, and second, soul, and evermore, soul. So with that, and recalling from our reading Vicki Hamilton's experiential conviction that I know with absolute certainty that my body and soul are two separate entities, we begin our Soul Focus series with two other pertinent quotes. The first is from Shakespeare's Hamlet. There are more things in heaven and earth, Horatio, than are dreamt of in our philosophy. And the second from American journalist, writer, cartoonist, humorist, and playwright James Thurber. All people should strive to learn before they die what they are running from and to and why. Sorry, I don't normally like to do this during a talk, but I think the heaters are making it a little dry up here. So as a fledgling teenage boy growing up in a pleasant middle-class suburb, or actually neighborhood, of St. Paul, Minnesota, I, and loads of local pals, began to have trouble navigating the world. This took various forms, but a fair example is the treehouse a bunch of us built in one friend's backyard, the central interior features of which were dense plumes of pot smoke and towering pyramids of freshly emptied beer cans. The latter practice came to full flower during our ensuing years as volunteer product testers for the American Brewers Association, where we generally held two key positions, prone and supine. Reflecting now on this dysfunction, I realize there are a number of possible contributors. Of course, there were the typical parental shortcomings, but the extent of our misconduct was completely out of proportion to their real or imagined deficiencies. Actually, our folks, who were educators, accountants, mechanics, doctors, civil servants, local shopkeepers, had given us the American dream. A safe, park-dotted neighborhood, decent schools, a few bucks to buy malts at the corner drugstore's soda fountain, of which in our neighborhood we not had only one, but two. Yet when we hit teendom, our substance-soaked antics were constant, intense, and at times so foolhardy, it recalls that quip about many a pubescent male's last woozy words being along the lines of, "Hey man, what's this?" Since this was the disco era, I've also considered that just as certain light patterns can cause seizures in some people, perhaps an incessant bass drumbeat at specific tempos adversely affected our developing brains. In which case, the Village People's song, "Can't Stop the Music," turns from a promise to a threat. But 70s disco changed to 80s new wave, and now stoked by additional incendiary chemicals, to cite two hit tune titles, we were still burning down the house, usually with us down under it. Why on earth were we so messed up? Raging hormones? I got a girlfriend. She didn't help, though she didn't hurt. What was lacking in our lives? God? I went to a Lutheran church. He didn't help either. What were we looking for, longing for, that our outwardly idyllic upbringing was not providing? And was it just us, or did other kids sense that something was missing? In fact, many young people and plenty of grown-ups did and do. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention reports that 57% of U.S. teenage girls and 29% of boys felt persistently sad or hopeless in 2021. Overall, 20 to 25% of Americans suffer from depression. A 2021 Brookings Institution study stated that from 2005 to 2019, an average of 70,000 Americans died annually from deaths of despair, drug overdose, alcohol poisoning, and suicide. Another 2024 CDC study says more than one in five high school students considered killing themselves. During the year before they were surveyed, more than one in five. Of course, numerous factors, personal, familial, social, economic, environmental contribute to states of mental and emotional health. And their disparate effects negatively impact some people far, far more than others. Yet in what he calls a nightmare about the children of affluence, when attorney, author, and social change advocate Sharif Abdullah taught at a leadership intensive for largely white middle-class high schoolers, much like I was as a kid, he was stunned to discover how many had attempted or seriously considered suicide. And viewing this as culturally symptomatic, to me, he nailed the deeper diagnosis. Suicide is an extreme vote of no confidence in a society that doesn't work, he writes. Suicide is a radical opting out. We have created a society our children want to leave. They want connection and instead get materiality. They want meaning and instead get a life ripped free of context, historical, social, spiritual, communal. America's middle class children face spiritual starvation on a mass scale. A related sign of this famine struck San Francisco State professor Jacob Needleman when he taught a philosophy course to other high school students. They told him they'd had no place in their lives where they could explore what he calls the questions of the heart. Who am I? Why are we here? What are we meant to serve? And he says these young people were enthralled to find a setting where they could ask these questions instead of being ashamed of them. A culture whose youth feel ashamed to ask central existential questions is a culture whose youth are morally and mortally malnourished. This is tragic, yet on a deep level, not surprising. For while over the past 500 plus years, the modern era endowed humankind with a profusion of wondrous gifts, its pitfalls are ever more apparent and consequential. Forthcoming reflections chart this in depth. But for now, the renowned scholar of world religions, Houston Smith, captures the gist when he states that the modern outlook has created an abnormal condition for the human spirit. The modern outlook has created an abnormal condition for the human spirit. The essence of this enfeebling condition is an acute deficiency of a transcendent, sometimes called a transrational, that is beyond the rational, framework of meaning and purpose fit for our present time and circumstances. While its spiritual starvation pangs often especially plague the hungry hearts of youth, many millions of outwardly sated adults are also inwardly famished. And besides deaths of despair, emaciation-related disorders are epidemic. Author and filmmaker Phil Cousineau names a few. Every illness has its symptoms, and ours is betrayed by our obsessions, addictions, and violence, our corrosive loneliness, vague purposelessness, and Hall of Mirrors narcissism. To suggest a transcendent dimension of existence in no way devalues the astounding truths revealed by modernism and the supreme ability of its science to comprehend and manipulate the physical world. It just means placing the modern rational mindset, primarily rooted in the philosophy of materialism, which holds that physical matter constitutes the whole of reality, within a broader transrational sphere of awareness. numerous testimonies of that awareness, and its consistently constructive effects lie ahead. Here I'll only cite William James, the father of American psychology and one of the nation's most significant philosophers. For when James scrupulously appraised such testimonies in The Varieties of Religious Experience, which would more accurately read transrational experience, as most have no connection to religion, he decisively concluded that these, quote, forbid a premature closing of our accounts with reality. For much of modernism's rise, any non-materialist accounts in the West were mostly kept open by weekend deposits of often counter-rational Christian teachings into the otherwise rational week. This division may be a bit less distinct in the Islamic world, yet is still plain. And by disregarding glaring incongruities, there remain people with one foot in each domain. But by and large, over the past century, and especially its latter half, that increasingly shaky detente, akin to a rickety beer can pyramid in my neighborhood treehouse, where a measure of mental fuzziness during assembly helps one imagine it's stable, has collapsed. As just a few of many signs, over the past several decades, the percentage of Americans with no religious affiliation jumped from 5% to almost 30%. Nearly a quarter of adults raised as Muslims in the U.S. no longer identify as such. In several Western European countries, about half or more people now have no religious affiliation. In the UK, of those who still identify as Christian, the number deemed non-practicing is 3 times that of practicing adherents. This too is not surprising, because the great mythologist Joseph Campbell makes clear that today, rendering the modern world spiritually significant by recovering the transcendent aspects of human life cannot be wrought by turning back or away from what has been accomplished by the modern revolution. For that revolution's discoveries swept away the world that fashioned, quote, those great coordinating mythologies which now are known as lies. And that this totally transformed context has, quote, rendered the ancient formula ineffective, misleading, and even pernicious. As we'll see, pernicious is not too strong a portrayal. Yet as just glimpsed, lacking any coordinating mythology in one's life, any recognition of the transcendent aspect of our humanness, countless people suffer, even unto despair, and even, perhaps especially, if they're unaware of the underlying abnormal condition. Thankfully, a clear and potent transrational template that differs profoundly from such decrepit ancient beliefs is freely available, including to the 67% of America's religiously unaffiliated who yet hold that humans have a soul or spirit, and the 63% who affirm that there is something spiritual beyond the natural world, even if we can't see it. To learn what that is, I invite you to return next Sunday. Namaste and blessed be.